The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So let's bring in this idea of conditioning. And let me reread what I read in the beginning, which was, watch your thoughts, they become your words. Watch your words, they become your actions. Watch your actions, they become your habits. Watch your habits, they become character. Watch your character, it becomes your destiny. Lao Tzu. And what I would actually want to add is really watch what's motivating your thoughts. So much of what, you know, it is true that just your words, simply like, for example, if I'm thinking somebody's being sloppy, for example, I'm observing and I think, oh, and my mind goes and uses the word sloppy. That has a tone, right? And behind the tone is an emotional valence, right? An energy, which if we're being very simple with the Buddha's words, let's look for greed, hatred, and delusion, right? So there's a little bit of ill will or a little bit of aversion in the word sloppy, right? So I think they're sloppy. I'm just thinking it. And then once I've said that, thought that in my mind, let's say they keep making a mess, I'm very much more likely to say, wow, you're being sloppy today, aren't you? Right? Like, there's, you know, maybe I'd catch that word, but sometimes it's just so subtle, we're not quite aware. But there's this momentum that goes, and it's not just the words. It is really so important to pay attention to what is the energy. If you just keep it simple, greed, hatred, delusion, driving the thinking. Yes? Can you, yeah, please get the mic.
I'm wondering if the same is true with an observation thought that is positive. So, he looks sloppy. What if it were he looks incredibly smart?
Yes.
Then the thought when he behaves a certain way, I'm going to say, see how smart he is.
Yes, it does. I mean, watch for yourself. Watch it in yourself. But yes. And so there is greed, there is ill will, and there is delusion that can, very classically are operating. But we can also condition ourselves toward goodwill, you know, toward kindness, toward generosity, you know, towards letting go. These are, you know, the Brahma Viharas, compassion, loving kindness, sympathetic joy. Like, if I was motivated, my mind was motivated by sympathetic joy, I might be watching this person be sloppy in one mindset, which is maybe with some aversion, and another mindset it might be, wow, they're really having fun, what they're doing over there. They're just like having a blast. They're just going for it. They don't care what's happening. They're just engaged in what they're doing. And then I might think, oh, I'm happy that they're having a good time, right? So it's a very different energetic conditioning that's happening. I'm much more likely to see it in a different way and then respond in a different way.
So what is the teaching about judgment? because whether negative or positive, it's basically thought is a judgment.
Well, I mean, I can see why you would say that around thought is a judgment. I mean, essentially, the Buddha taught us that thoughts are constructed. That we need to watch our thoughts. They're constructed, fabricated, and they are impacted by a lot of things. The mood, your relationship with the person, your associations with things, that there is so much in here. And this is perfectly what I'm trying to pull apart here and trying to emphasize, which is the conditioning that happens to us. And one place to start to notice the conditioning is by watching our thoughts, and then, ooh, what's the energy behind them? Right? Just in that moment, what is giving birth? What is feeding the thinking? It's, you know, there's a sort of, it's just often said, what one frequently thinks, right, is what you ponder, right? And that creates a thought habit, right? And a mental propensity, our propensity to think those thoughts continue. In the research on what we think, I don't know how they do this research, but when they try and track the thoughts that we have each day, like 80-90% of them are repetitive. They're not very many of them are novel. So we really, you know, it's sort of like I think about the mind as a stream, right? And but it's just maybe circulating. And so what we're feeding that stream one day comes back up that day and the next day. And the more we keep repeating it, the more it's going to come up. And one of the other things the Buddha talks about in this realm is how this, you know, why do we think the kinds of thoughts that we think? Why do we create these thought habits? And he really talks about the influence of the people that we're around and the surroundings that we're around. And for us, I would say, you know, the TV we watch and the things we read and follow on our phones that are with all these algorithms, right, that are just fed to feed right into our whatever direction we're going. That, right? That's just deepening the conditioning. Because if you're going toward the scary, then the algorithms are going to feed you more scary, right? And if you're going toward sweet stories, more health stories, you're going to get fed more health stories. So you can see how much our conditioned nature is being exploited or taken advantage of or utilized in the media that we consume. So it's important to be conscious consumers, because we really are adding to that pot of soup, right, that is circulating inside of us. And that, you know, this is, so much of this happens, starts happening when we're just teeny tiny. We don't have any choice. You know, the stories we're told and all the things that we're exposed to, you know, they come in and they're part of our soup. You know, they're there ready to pop up in a moment's notice when something reminds us of it. And so this is how, you know, many of us, you know, all of us in this culture, as far as I know, we create these biases, these stereotypes, these expectations of how humans are going to behave, and they're often based on physical appearance, right, or job titles or positions. You know, there's these strong associations. But it's really flawed perception. You know, because really, ideally, we'd just meet each human being as unique and new and discoverable, but we can't really exactly get away from our conditioning. It's pretty hard to leave behind all these associations and this history. Another example for me and my experience of what happens with conditioning is I had a very generous friend who offered to paint my house for me, which was a really huge gift, right? And it was exciting because I really didn't like the color of my house very much. And it was a very old paint job. And so I was looking around. I was like, well, what color? You know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime event to have your house painted, right? For me, anyway. And he said, what color do I want, right? And so I'm like, everywhere I go, I'm watching and looking at the colors of the houses. And it just gets more and more obsessive in the mind. I'm just like, I don't even have a choice anymore. It's just like the mind is looking, and then it's like, oh, and the trim, right? Oh, and then the roof, and then like all of these pieces. It's like the mind is just digging in. And so what is the energy behind that? Greed. Desire. Right? Want. There's, to me, it's like that's the fuel that partly keeps powering it. I want the right color. You know, so this, it was a long process because it wasn't something that happened quickly. And it was, I just was like, oh my God, you know, my head would just be like so carried down the stream of conditioning. The attention was captivated, right, by this desire, this query, this question, this want. Yeah, please, Lisa, go ahead, just find a mic.
So in that case,
yes,
or in the sloppy case, either way,
yeah,
because we all do these, I think of it like a guinea pig running around, a hamster on a wheel, and there's the ill will wheel, the other wheel, and it just goes from that one and this one. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But would you, in a meditation session, step off the thoughts maybe, and since you know that you're on the greed one or whatever, just sit with the feeling of want, want, want?
Yes, I would absolutely do that. Knowing greed.
Uh-huh.
Studying greed. What does it feel like?
Uh-huh.
Notice the compulsion, the energy. Notice how my body is moving. You know, like there can be this feeling in the body. And yes, I would very much as I could, I would be mindful of greed.
Mm-hmm.
Or mindful of the aversion.
And then the idea is that as you're sitting and watching your experience of being with that feeling, that it would start to, as you learn about it, subside, or you would be more aware of it coming on. And
so I think this is where we go back to the first noble truth and the second noble truth, right? Really understanding. For me, when I watch greed and I watch aversion, it's painful. It's painful when I can't stop the mind, right? I feel this relentlessness, wanting, this desire. You know, it's fine to want things. It's great. It's not that's not a problem. But when we latch on, when it becomes clinging, right? It's painful.
Yeah.
And so that is where, for me, it's the helping the mind connect this energy, this wanting in this way, and clinging onto it hurts. Mm-hmm. this is suffering. Mm-hmm. And really, we really start to memorize this. And what we might notice is that, you know, as soon as I could, with my house, for example, I just, you know, it took a little time for it to unwind, but I would notice what was happening, and I would recognize that this is uncomfortable, this is driven by greed, and I don't like it. I don't want my mind to be caught in this way, that there's no freedom here. And so when I'm developing that pairing, I'm pairing pain, suffering, dukkha, with the activity of greed and clinging, I'm learning. Something deep in me is learning. Like we learn how to tie a shoe, we stop having to think about it. And so letting go, in the case of looking at house paint, once I've memorized this, is like, phew, done, right? And so sometimes it's item by item, but sometimes we learn in a way around a relationship, for example, where we want certain kind of attention, and we learn over time that, oh, it just creates tremendous conflict and disappointment, and then we stop doing it in relation, all relationships, everywhere. So,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
It's already on.
Continuing with that example, I guess I'm not clear on what that process, how does it resolve? I mean, if you're being mindful of this particular greed, mm-hmm. I mean, without other inputs and you're just sitting with it, does it not feed itself? Or how do you separate from it? Or how does it, resolve?
Yeah, so I might very well, once I take enough time, so there's this, maybe my answer would change over time. In the beginning, we need to really just keep spending time like, okay, get it, learn, okay, yeah, this feels sucky, yep, this is clinging, yep, this is suffering, like it's just this, And then after I've done that in a moment, right, or, you know, for a long enough period, then I'm like, okay, let's redirect the mind. I can choose to redirect the mind. If I'm driving, then I start to bring my awareness into my hands on the steering wheel. I invite myself to connect with the present moment.
So it's not one sitting.
It's probably not one sitting unless you get very, very concentrated, very, very free. It can happen. It can happen in one sitting. It can. So go for it, right? But if you find yourself losing, meaning you're trying to pair the pain and the wisdom, right, around what's happening, and you're just relentlessly staying in the craving cycle, it's a good idea to shift your awareness away, because you're just really reinforcing when you get lost like that. Nicole?
Is that true that we have a perception of ourselves, who I am, what I'm identified with, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you have one of those?
I just what I'm hearing and I'm learning is that when would I recognize when the greed, when sometimes I'm not even clear, what am I clinging to? And I think recognizing that in the mind is part of it, right?
Can you try, first of all, maybe let me ask you this question. Hmm. What's coming up for you that you're asking this question right now?
That I'm confused sometimes.
That you feel confused sometimes.
And I feel the emotion, and I have some issues, but when I look at the big picture, it's not that big an issue, but the emotion is there, mm-hmm. that the suffering is there.
Yeah.
So then I don't know what happened, that I got this emotion, and the next hour I could mm-hmm. totally have different emotions, but I'm looking for, I'm just trying to understand myself,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and how I can be aware of all these thoughts behind my, because thought creates emotion, right?
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Yeah.
And then I feel like I'm in this connection. I'm not clear sometimes. It's just maybe I connected with so many issues that I probably, what you suggest is to be aware of it.
So maybe, Nicole, the simplest answer is to sit with being confused. That maybe there's too much going on and you're stirring up things by trying to figure it out, and it's just, oh, this is confusion. You know, maybe that's the simplest first step answer.
It's true.
Okay.
It's true.
Okay. Okay. And then there's clarity, right? I mean, and then there's clarity, because being confused, I know I'm confused. And I'm not trying to get my mind to do something it can't do in the moment, because the mind is too confused.
And instead of looking for solution or find out what's going on, just sit as Buddhism philosophies. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's helped.
Oh. Yeah. Go ahead. Go.
Okay. Hi, it's my first time here.
Welcome.
So you were speaking of greed, delusion, and there's a third thing.
Ill will.
So these are chapters or books in Buddhism, is that true? Or what I'm really asking, is there one for I want to be right?
I want to be right? Yeah, so if I want to be right, there's probably either greed or ill will behind it. And or maybe delusion. So if I want to be right, it's because, for example, I want to be the best. I want to be the smartest. That is motivated by a sense of wanting, right, to be something, which also has to do with a selfing. But if it also might be I'm motivated because I really want to embarrass this other person. I want to be the best because I don't want them to be good anymore, or I don't want them to get what I want. And it also could be delusion, because it's like, you know, this fantasy of being this and that, and then I'm going to have this castle, and then I'll have that prince and princess or whatever it is.
So it's always those three. I thought that maybe you're building on things each week.
Those are kind of three. They're the biggest things that are conditioning us that we're trying to get free of. Yeah.
I would recommend, we've been going through a lot of lists, but the five hindrances.
Mm-hmm.
That one is mm-hmm. has been pretty clear. Mm-hmm.
There's, So I think we, oh, go ahead. Do you want to get the mic? So, please do. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, my name is Candace. I was here about a year ago.
Yeah.
And so my question is, what is the fine line between self-acceptance, that you are what you are, and you realize that, yes, I'm greedy, I am sometimes make a lot of mistakes, between the line between the self-criticism and self-acceptance? Mm-hmm. There are certain health being just accepting who you are, mm-hmm. instead of turn around and say, God, I'm so greedy, I'm so hopeless, I'm just this, that.
Yeah, it's not helpful to be all critical of ourselves, is
right,
it? So. Then we're adding ill will. Right? So neither of those are very good, right? Neither. But it's a beautiful question. So I'm going to answer it and we'll see how it lands. And you can let me know. So keep the mic so you can tell me whatever. So actually, what comes to mind is Kristen Neff is a researcher who has done a lot of research on self-compassion. And she does a really nice job of defining the difference between self-compassion and self-indulgence. So I want to start there. So self-compassion, right, is when we're doing something to take care of ourselves. And there aren't negative consequences to us of doing that. Self-indulgence might be we're doing something nice for ourselves, but we're doing it at a cost that is causing harm. For example, we're eating too many cookies because it's too much sugar or too many calories or whatever it is. Or we're spending too much money and we are going to have a debt that we can't really pay very easily and we need to do something else. But we're causing some form of harm when we're engaging in self-indulgence versus doing a self-compassionate act. So it's not a problem to want to take good care of ourselves. But we can learn to take care of ourselves and buy things and do things without greed motivating our action or minimizing how much we allow that to happen. And how much we decide to do that is up to us. You know, we get to decide. But certainly it doesn't help to add, we've already got one sort of, you know, conditioning factor that isn't so wholesome, which is a lot of greed. It's not helpful to add aversion or ill will or hatred to that. Yeah, is that helpful at all? It's a very simple answer to what you're saying, but I'm trying to create a starting point. Okay, so far so good. Thank you. Okay. All right. Are there other... I want to make sure, you know, we're getting a little late, but we can still have a little time for some breakout groups if we would like, or we can continue like this. What would you...
Three groups of three.
Three groups of three. All right. Yeah? Is that the consensus? Everybody... You vote to continue the interaction?
That's my vote.
That's your vote too? Okay, great. Well, let's just stay. Okay, great. Yeah. So I want to say a couple more things. Conditioning should really be understood as a natural process. It's not something horrible. It's natural. It's nature. It's part of what has helped us survive as a species. You know, it's connected from, in my view, my interpretation, to evolution, right? To survival. So let's not make it an enemy, but let's now that we're more and more aware of it, we can start to engage and take more and more responsibility for our own minds, for our own well-being, right? If we understand the train of it, so if we go back to the momentum of something, and we think about the example I gave of the
the paint and the house, you know, that can really, we can, you know, well, let's actually just think about food, right? Like if we get anything that's going to be ongoing in our life. I mean, the painting of the house has a lifespan. But buying the right clothes or getting the best food or, you know, like the things that we can get engaged in that have to do with collecting, you know, that can create a huge momentum for us in our life over time because it starts very young. And that can really gather some speed and energy in our lives. Same is true for, you know, hating. If we don't like something. One of the biggest things about people who, when we get anxious about something or we don't really like something, there's this way that we start to avoid it. What we don't like, we avoid, right? Except if you're this practitioner and you're learning about Buddhism and they say, don't do that. Stay and face what you don't like. But when we're not acting in opposition to the conditioned nature of not liking something, we start to avoid it. So if I start to avoid going into places that are painted pink, for example, because I don't like them, then maybe it starts to be that, oh, well, pink and reddish are too close. I'm going to start to avoid going into everything that's red. And then it's painted red. And then it's like, oh, but bricks are red too. So now I can't go into pink places or red places or brick places. And then it becomes, well, some browns have a little bit of red. And so now I can't go into any brown places either, right? And it just, this is, it exponentially grows, that what we're avoiding gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That's a conditioned thing that happens. So, let's see. Any more questions? Or I wanted to ask, can you provide an example of where you've noticed yourself getting conditioned in life? What is it? What have you noticed? What is something that you start to get kind of really focused on? Or, Iman, thank you.
Well, conditioning comes from a young age, as you mentioned. Yeah. And so our parents have a very significant influence on how we are today, unless you consciously break that conditioning.
That's right.
So one of them is that my mom was super critical and judgmental. Mm. So I've become that way too, and I'm becoming less and less. But it's one of those things that is just, it just takes time. I mean,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It does. It takes time. And it's really good to be patient about it. Because when we get upset about our conditioning, we actually tend to feed it. So the more we can cultivate this, the attention that is described in mindfulness, which is paying attention on purpose in the present moment, with an attitude of acceptance or kindness, you know, with this wisdom, this discernment, the more we can notice things from that place, the more they get free. Yes.
But also I can see the benefit of some kinds of conditioning.
Yeah, if absolutely.
If you have a negative experience, like you're threatened or attacked, going down a dark alley, in the future you're going to avoid dark alleys or being alone. And so some of it is self-preservation.
That's why I just said, and it's important to re-say it, it is natural. It is natural. And yes, we you know, what would it be like if we didn't learn in this way, right? What would happen if we didn't move toward getting the things that we need to survive or getting away from the things that feel threatening? It's bringing mindfulness. And in fact, what is described as an arhant is somebody who is free of greed, hatred, and delusion. So it is possible to be in this world without this conditioning nature. It is possible. Yeah. Richard, did you want to say something?
So the discussion about what Lisa was bringing up and Lyman were talking about, I just wanted to share the Pali term for clinging is upadana. And it's usually described as, you know, translated or rendered as clinging, but it also means to feed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you grab onto the idea of, you know, I don't want to be confused right now, I want something else, this clinging for that other thing is also feeding this dukkha, this sense of disquiet, this sense of, you know, the pain of that. It's built in a way. When we do that, we're feeding at the same time.
I often say the example of, if I tell you not to think about chocolate chip cookies, what are you thinking about?
Warm ones.
Yeah, it just, warm ones, yes. So when we are trying to get rid of something, we are still paying attention to it. That's what our awareness is, you know, and our awareness is what, you know, our attention is our gasoline, it's our life force, it's the thing that we have, and when we give things our attention, our awareness, we are feeding them. So if we give all the negative stuff all of our attention, not liking it, we're just adding to that.
Yeah, we're constant with
it. It forms a constellation that is this idea of I, the self, that around that is what you're saying. Is that what you're saying, kind of, this?
Well, that wasn't what I was saying, but
okay.
It certainly can add to the, you know, there is a sense of I want when we're clinging, right? So it is in there very much. You know, I don't want to be whatever, critical, I don't want to be clinging, right? I'm not saying that you were doing that, Lyman, but, you know, but just that adds to it, you know, it really adds to it, constructing. Yeah. When we're in ignorance, when we're not paying attention, we blindly follow our likes and avoid our dislikes. Just blindly going. And, you know, it's so easy because it is like the current. It does carry us. And it's a lot harder to go against that current. The stopping takes effort. If you think about chocolate chip cookies and you've already decided you want one and you're going to reach for it, it's a lot harder, right, to not do it when everybody else around you is eating the chocolate cookies and you've been eating them too. There's a resistance that we have to, you know, apply because the current is going in one direction. This is the floods. Buddha talks about it as the floods, right? This energy that is, you know, carrying people downstream. So if ignorance is, you know, in ignorance, we're blindly following our likes and our dislikes, avoiding our dislikes. one thing to pay attention to is liking and not liking. Because we set up the precondition when we're having all these preferences. I want it to go this way, I want it to go that way, I don't want it to go like that, I like this, I don't like that. So I like it quiet, I don't like it when people come in late, I like it da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, we're really setting ourselves up to keep following. I'm trying to think about sort of this is where maybe we talk about renunciation or letting go or letting be. How do we practice? If I'm thinking about a human being, maybe we go back to a human that was, my mind was thinking was sloppy earlier, right? Maybe in that situation, practicing letting go or renunciation would be, let this person be this person. You know, can I just let them be the way they are? Why do I need to, you know, like or not like what they're doing? This is their way. Right? So, to me, that's an act of generosity. It's really an act of kindness to let just, you know, to disinvest from all this what we think is right, wrong, what I like, what I don't like. You know, it's much more peaceful. Can we, just use the mic because it's recorded, so.
So I see a point that letting go of this other people's, for example, sloppy behaviors, negative behaviors. But if you keep thinking that way, doesn't it bring it to some sort of indifference or apathy towards other people?
I think people are afraid of that. And people are afraid of that too when we start practicing self-compassion. It's really interesting. I love that question because a lot of times when you ask somebody to stop being so critical of themselves, they say, well, I'm afraid that I won't keep trying. I'm afraid that I won't still, you know, as if the criticism is a motivation. But it's not a motivation, not a positive motivation. Their motivation exists outside of, you know, our criticism. So letting people, this attitude of allowing, of acceptance, isn't the same as indifference. There's actually this term equanimity. Are you familiar with equanimity, the term equanimity? In Buddhism, so this is the ultimate of balance, right? The ultimate of non-preference. And the ultimate of being stable and steady in the face of anything is equanimity. And the near enemy of equanimity is indifference. Equanimity itself is not indifference. It's caring, but it's caring without reactivity. It's sort of a whole different gear. We probably have time for one more comment or question. Go ahead, Nicole.
And okay. So in order of doing that, in 24 hours a day, other than the time that we sleep, how much of it we can be aware of all these? Because life is going on and the train of thought is going out of, you know, it's just going. It's
yeah.
just, and yes, when I sit, when I'm I pause. I can't think of that. But when life goes on and on and on, and then judgment comes and you react and so on, I think, how do you manage this awareness of all these good lessons that we need to learn? I mean, the practice of it.
Thank you, Nicole, for your question and acknowledging this is the currents that you're talking about. You're swimming in the currents, and the Buddha, you know, this raft practice that I teach, right? That is about this idea of the Buddha teaching us that we can build a raft, and it's actually literally, you know, has to do with these attentional awareness and wisdom and, you know, sort of discernment, and that when we have these mental factors, when they're working together, they buoy us so that we don't get carried. We can get across the floods of daily life. And so it is possible to cultivate and grow our capacity to be mindful and aware all of the time, maybe, when you become an arahant. Nicole, will you share the microphone? Okay. Marabia, you wanted to...
No, I was pointing at
you. Oh, at Scott. Okay. It's great. I thought it was you. Great. Go ahead, Scott.
I have two kind of issues, and I hope I can remember both of them. But first of all, you were mentioning a near enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard of so we have the five hindrances, and then each one has like a near friend and a near enemy. Is that?
Well, no, this is, I'm talking about the four Brahma Viharas. And probably a near enemy is, it's one common translation, but it could, you know, it's like, something that can disguise as the Brahma Viharas are these heavenly abodes or heavenly mind states, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. So in each one, like with compassion, that's beautiful quality, but a near miss would be being sympathetic. I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry for you. Not a sense of empathic resonance and feeling, you know, an alignment with the suffering that you see in front of you. Does that make sense?
No.
Well, then...
But that's, it's kind of at a different level, maybe. I've never understood that kind of difference between empathy and sympathy, that how you discriminate, one's considered a positive quality and one's not. So that's kind of a lexical question. I'd rather set that aside because I just in view of our time.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the bigger issue for me is chocolate cake, basically.
Yeah.
I think it might even have been Gil who was in, maybe the issue at hand was talking about, like, you have a cake in the house,
mm-hmm,
and you want to eat it, but you're trying to resist it, and then you finally just eat it, and some of the relief you get from it is like you are no longer thinking about having the cake in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and I guess my own personal junk food habit is that, like, if I buy something, I'm going to eat 90% of it in a setting, no matter what quantity it is. So my only line of defense is just to not get it in the house, whatever like that. But I don't like that sensation of attempting to renunciate some, you know, the renunciation, yeah, is a really stressful,
yes,
thing.
It gets easier. It gets easier.
Just through the maturation of our practice.
That's right. You are growing a muscle, you are growing a capacity with this practice. You are learning how to sit with that which is uncomfortable. And you really get better at it. You really get better at it. You are learning You're developing. You are going against the conditioning, which is to go toward what we like and away from what we don't like, right? We grow that capacity. We really do. Keep it up.
Feels don't. Like we're kind of reparenting ourselves.
We more. Are. We are. We absolutely are. With conscious, that's isn't that exciting? We have that possibility. We can. We absolutely can. Yes. Amen. All right. With that, let's call it quits for tonight. Thank you so much. This was really fun. I really appreciate all of your engagement, and may you ride your rafts. May all beings find rafts to carry them over the floods. May you be free. Thank you.
Stopping.